The following program is brought to you by We Are Many. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.
Thanks, John, and it's a real pleasure to be here in Chicago for the conference and to be in the US when there's so many exciting things happening. Obviously not Donald Trump, but the response and the resistance to Donald Trump, and to see so many more people joining the socialist movement and getting involved in campaigns and fighting for an alternative. So this is the 150th anniversary of James Connolly's birth. So what I'm going to try and do is give a kind of short history of Connolly's life and times. He lived in very turbulent times, just like ourselves, and attempted to kind of forge resistance and also an alternative to the system that he hated. But I also want to talk a bit about why I think James Connolly is very, very relevant for socialists in Ireland, but not just in Ireland, here in the US and globally, and the kind of politics that James Connolly represented. Now, one of the reasons it's very important to do that is because everybody in Ireland knows who James Connolly is. He was a martyr for Irish independence, and often that's where it stops, because there's been a systematic attempt to bury James Connolly's radicalism and present him as a militant Irish Republican or a militant Irish nationalist, and really to hide his association and involvement with the socialist movement and his overall goal of getting rid of imperialism and capitalism. Now, the reason why that happened and was successful is because the leaders of the new state that was born after the Irish Revolution were very conservative, they were pro-capitalist, they were religiously conservative, and the kind of aspirations that Connolly had didn't really fit very well for the new state that Connolly played such an important role in establishing and fighting for. So I think it's very important that we do everything we can to bring out the real James Connolly. And I think when you look at his life and times and his contributions to the socialist movement, that becomes very, very clear, and people can judge for themselves where Connolly stands and what he would be doing today if he was alive and facing the kind of political, economic and social challenges that we're all familiar with. So Connolly was born in 1868 in a Cowgate in Edinburgh. He was actually born in Scotland, so the leader of the future Irish Revolution was actually Scottish, which for some people who are very nationalistic presents a small problem. How do you force Connolly into the nationalist box? He was born around 20 years after the Great Hunger. The Irish famine, which people might know about, when a million people died and a million people were forced to flee Ireland because of poverty, starvation, and they went all over the world. They went to the United States, obviously, they went to Australia, and those who had the least amount of money ended up most often in Britain and in Scotland. So that's where Connolly's family ended up. They were refugees of the Great Famine, and they lived in Cowgate, which was a very poor area. Thousands and thousands of Irish immigrants lived there. They were at the bottom of the economic and social ladder. Connolly, from the earliest age, was working. I think he started his first job when he was 8 years old. He left school when he was 11, which is interesting because that's when his formal education ends. So when you think about his theoretical contributions, he had no formal, he didn't go to secondary school, he didn't go to university, so his education was very much in the university of life, and in the socialist movement, that's where he learned everything that he would, that's how he made sense of the world. So he was born there. The first time Connolly seen Ireland was in the uniform of a British soldier. This is often another aspect of Connolly's life that has been played down. He was 14 years old, he joined the British Army, he didn't use his real name or his real age, and he was sent to Ireland. He was a private in a regiment of Queen Victoria's Army, the Famine Queen. So Connolly grew up in an Irish community, in an Irish family, so he would have been well acquainted with the British role in Ireland, but nevertheless, economic circumstances meant that a lot of young Irish people who were living in Britain would join the British Army. And this is where, so he was there, he went there in 1882 with his regiment. And during those years, there was intense struggles, the land war, the rural land war, the fight over land in Ireland. So that meant Connolly, you know, would have been sent out to deal with disturbances, potentially. He more than likely was sent to Belfast to deal with sectarian clashes between Catholic and Protestant workers in the 1880s. So I think that this gave Connolly a real insight into the reality of what British rule in Ireland meant and the role of the British Army. I don't think he ever talked about his experiences in the British Army. He wrote a few articles which are worth reading about economic conscription and his bitterness at the role of the army comes right through and what soldiers are asked to do. But he also speaks with a lot of compassion about what soldiers face. And I just think the vision of a former soldier of the Queen's Army becoming a revolutionary leader is a very good one, and hopefully we'll see a lot more of that, whether it's in the US or in other imperial countries. And not just that, a migrant, because Connolly was very much an immigrant in Ireland, along with his great collaborator, Jim Larkin, who was also from England, wasn't born in Ireland, and to see them as two of Ireland's greatest revolutionary leaders as migrants, I think it gives us a great vision as well for the role of refugees and migrants in Ireland and around the world going forward. So yeah, so he went AWOL from the army. I think historians, they believe that his regiment was maybe being sent to India and he didn't fancy going there, quite far away, and maybe got fed up ruling other countries on behalf of the Queen. So he goes back to Scotland, and it's in Scotland that Connolly gets involved with the Labour movement and the Socialist movement. His brother's already a leader there in Scotland, and there's agitation, there's a wave of strikes right across Britain and Ireland as well. It's the new unionism wave, when large numbers of unorganised workers, unskilled workers, workers who are at the very low wages, stage rebellions for the right to have a union, for better wages. And Connolly joins that and is inspired by it. And this is also the period as well where Marxism begins to get a foothold in Britain. There's an English version of Capital that gets published, and there's many other popular and accessible versions of that that Connolly could read, or people like him from working class backgrounds. So Connolly joins the socialist movement in Scotland. He reads the Communist Manifesto, and he becomes a Marxist. He becomes a revolutionary socialist. And he went to conferences like this. He went to small study groups where they read Marxist pamphlets and pamphlets by the other leading socialists in Scotland and internationally. And I think that the vision of, if you think about Connolly, there's hospitals named after him, there's roads named after him, there's trains named after him. People don't normally associate Connolly participating in the smallish socialist movement of Scotland when they think about that Connolly, but I actually think it's very, very important. So I think that the key thing about Connolly, they understand what he did for the rest of his life. I think the Marxism that he learned and developed in the late 1880s, 1890s in Scotland really shaped his political vision, his strategies, right up until the 1916 revolution in Ireland. And there's not a break. There's a continued attempt to apply what he learned to the world around him. And I think that becomes clear when you go and read Connolly and read his arguments, you begin to see a very, very different Connolly from the one that's often presented. Connolly leaves for Ireland. He goes back to Ireland. Poverty took him back. He was a very effective organiser in Scotland. It was very difficult to get a job. And poverty stayed with Connolly more or less for the rest of his life. A lot of socialist organisers in that period struggled with finances, especially if you became well known. It was increasingly difficult to get an employer to hire you. While he was in Scotland, he had stood for election. He was an editor of a socialist newspaper. He had participated in international discussions about the future of the socialist movement. So by the time he gets to Ireland in 1896, he's already a quite experienced leader of the socialist movement. And when he gets there, he helps to found a new organisation called the Irish Socialist Republican Party. And what I think Connolly does in Ireland is that he really pioneers the application of Marxist ideas to Irish political reality. And this is where I think his legacy today is vastly and very, very important. So the Irish Socialist Republican Party is founded in a pub by eight or nine people who were in the socialist movement. Again, very, very small beginnings. And the goal of the party is the simultaneous revolutionary overthrow of the British Empire and capitalism in Ireland. So the reason why this was such an important, so Connolly synthesises two different struggles, two struggles that were looked at the time as different struggles. One was the struggle to free Ireland from British rule, and the other, which was presented as a separate struggle because socialists didn't engage in national struggles, was the struggle for socialism. And so this synthesis, I think, is very, very is crucial to understanding Connolly's perspective. And so it was there was a socialist movement in Ireland that was quite irrelevant, not for lack of trying by socialists. There was obviously there had been many, many attempts at national revolt in Ireland to throw off British rule. So Marx and Engels had paid a lot of attention to Ireland. It was central to the way they thought about national liberation struggles. It was also central to their view of how a revolution would happen in Britain. So they were very much in solidarity with Irish struggles led by the Fenian Brotherhood, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, the Fenian movement that were happening in Ireland. And they understood that their argument was that British workers would need to break with the support for British control over Ireland in order to have a revolution in England, that there couldn't be a revolution in Britain if the British working class supported the British Empire's hold in other countries around the world. So for those reasons, the struggle in Ireland was very, very important, because it was something that the Marxists campaigned on in Britain. But the reality of an Irish rising and a defeat for the British army in Ireland was something that would spark a big debate within Britain and maybe lay the basis. So Marx and Engels basically believed that the key to a revolution in Britain was the Irish and Irish revolt. They didn't focus on the role of the Irish working class, because the Irish working class was quite small. Ireland, because of its relationship with the British Empire, its economy was quite underdeveloped. And held back. The British systematically retarded Irish economic development. But there was an emerging Irish working class. Places like Belfast had industrialised very, very quickly, were quite important to the empire. And there was a very, very large, unskilled workforce in places like Dublin. And it was this working class, because Connolly was living in Ireland, that Connolly was focused on. So Connolly was focused on the role that the Irish working class was going to play in the coming revolt against British rule. And his argument was that the only force in Ireland that will actually lead a revolution against Britain right to the end is the working class. Because if you read his magnificent labour in Irish history, he basically demonstrates how through the years the upper middle class and the ruling class in Ireland had basically betrayed the struggle for independence, because they were they were more afraid of the Irish masses from below than they were of British rule in Britain. So Connolly argues that the key force is the working class. So what they describe the new society that they want to create as a workers' republic. Connolly calls it a socialist workers' republic, and again brings together the idea of a workers' revolt and the establishment of an independent and free Ireland. Now, the reason Connolly argued that there's this notion that first you get independence, and then following that you can begin to fight around social and economic issues. We've heard this kind of argument. Connolly had no truck with that. It didn't make any sense. He had a theory of permanent revolution based on the idea that the working class, in its struggle for its own demands, will come up against not just capitalist rule and employer rule, but will come up against the rule of the British Empire. And so if you actually hold back the working class and their struggle, it will weaken the struggle for independence. It's very, very simple, but I think that that synthesis of how to combine both those struggles and not see them as two independent struggles was very, very, was absolutely crucial. So Connolly believed that the working class was the key revolutionary class in Ireland and could lead all the others who were frustrated and angry and wanted an independent Ireland and try to win over people from the Republican movement or people who were progressive nationalists behind what the socialist movement was doing. So I think that this theoretical contribution by Connolly is absolutely important. And in some ways, because Connolly was writing from the perspective of a colony, that contribution is ignored or played down because he's not writing from Britain or from Germany or anywhere else. So I think that because it's looking at the world from the point of view of the colonised working class, which is what I think Connolly was doing, it was a very important political contribution at the time. Connolly moves to the United States in 1903. He had a very interesting life. He lived in a number of places, and again, poverty was one of the factors that took him to the U.S. And when he was here, he worked in Troy, New Jersey, in a sewing machine company. He joined the Wobblies. He joined the Socialist Labour Party. He campaigned for Eugene Debs for president. He wrote a letter. He worked among Irish migrants and made the case that Irish migrants should break with the Democratic Party and join the socialist movement in the US. There's a great letter he wrote called Letter to Irish Wage Slaves in the United States. That's worth reading in terms of getting a perspective of what Connolly did when he was here. Because again, you think about Irish American leaders who praised the 1916 rebels. They would want nothing to do at the time with Connolly. And I think that his time in the US, one thing that happened was that he really deepened his understanding of working class struggle from below. I think he was, like many socialists, he was very excited about the emergence of the Wobblies and what they represented. And so he was able to incorporate very easily the idea of the industrial republic, the socialist industrial republic that the Wobblies put forward. His case was that the IWW should found a new mass socialist party. So some people rejected building political parties altogether because of the emphasis on, well, reformism and the downplaying of workers' struggles for getting out the vote and political compromises. Connolly argued that he still argued for a mass working class party that would be key. Now the other Connolly, the idea of workers' control beginning in the workplace and proceeding upwards, I think, was very, very important. And I think that was the vision of the Wobblies, that, you know, taking control of where you worked, expanding that to as many other places as possible. I think that in terms of what socialism would look like, who would be in charge, I think that experience of working with the Wobblies and that vision was very, very important to developing Connolly's vision of the role of the working class in terms of seizing control for themselves and emancipating themselves and bringing about fundamental change. And to that end, he wrote a great pamphlet that is still useful, called Socialism Made Easy, and it's probably Connolly's most popular pamphlet, where he basically attempts to take on he writes from the perspective of a socialist organizer in a workplace, dealing with the many questions that socialists are faced with. Isn't socialism foreign? Wouldn't you seize the wealth of the rich people? The answer is yes, but we would redistribute it to everybody else. He deals with all these questions in a way that actually would equip a socialist in a workplace or in a community or wherever you're active to be able to answer basic questions, which is what we are always trying to do. And I think that this is why the pamphlet was popular, you know, in places like Australia, Ireland, the United States, the English-speaking world, for the most part. He campaigned amongst, he worked, the community that he was in was the Irish community, Irish migrant community, and he was very aware of the challenges that migrants faced in the US. He wrote about, you know, that coming to America didn't liberate migrants, it actually replicated what they faced in the old world, except under different conditions. In Ireland, the wage workers were enslaved by, when you fought back, you came up against the British Empire. That wasn't the case in the US. You came up against, you didn't come up against a foreign empire. You came up against the rulers of the Republic. And so he agitated for revolutionary change in the United States as well, and I think it added a lot to his, understanding of socialism from below, and his understanding about the role unions could play in fight organizing for revolution. He goes back to Ireland in 1910 because he had basically been following political developments there, and I think he sensed that something was happening in Ireland, that there was potential for, new movements were developing, there was a sense of confidence, there was a push for home rule, which was a partial independence for Ireland. There was a new wing of the labour movement that was manifest in 1907 in Belfast, the Irish Transport Workers Union, when they managed to bring together Protestant and Catholic workers and have shut down the city. And so Connolly was following these developments and I think realised there was an opportunity for the socialist movement to involve itself and to put into practice the kind of arguments that he had helped develop in the 1890s. One of the first things that he confronts when he goes back to Ireland is Jim Larkin appoints him as the Ulster organiser for the Transport Workers Union, and he lives in Belfast. And Connolly believes that bringing together the Catholic and the Protestant working class was absolutely possible and crucial. And he campaigns on the docks in Belfast where there had been labour struggles and unity before, and has some success at actually bringing Catholic and Protestant workers together. But he also confronts the fact that Belfast is a deeply divided city where sectarianism is rife. Where the Orleans drum is constantly whipped up to divide Protestant and Catholic workers and make actual unity quite difficult. And there's a long history of sectarian violence in Belfast. There have been riots in the 1880s when a previous Home Rule Bill was being debated. And so there was growing sectarian tensions leading up to the debate about Home Rule in the period where he was there around 1911. And Connolly insisted, even though it was unpopular, when he stood for election, he was arguing on the necessity of Catholic and Protestant workers coming together, but he didn't dodge the question of opposing British rule in Ireland. And so when he was in a mixed ward where there was Catholic and Protestant workers, that didn't go down well. And so, you know, he was described as, he famously said, the socialists when we stand for office, the Republicans describe us as unionists, the unionists describe us as Republicans, and they never actually present us as we are. We're neither unionist nor nationalist. We stand for socialism. So that was a difficult project, but nevertheless, Connolly believed that Protestant workers could be won over to revolt both against the British Empire and against capitalism. Now, Connolly's argument here, again, is quite crucial, was crucial at the time and is crucial today. The way that Connolly believed that Protestant workers could be won over to socialism was not by ignoring the question of British rule. So he talks about, you know, Sinn Féin had become quite prominent, and he says there's things I agree with that Sinn Féin put forward, but there's other things that I disagree with. And one of those things was Sinn Féin's support for capitalism as a way to economically develop Ireland. And he said, if you go to speak to a Protestant worker and you say, join the fight against British Empire, and once we establish a new Ireland, you'll be exploited just like you are under the British Empire. He says that there's no, that Protestant workers are not going to break with everything that they've been brought up with in terms of, you know, what they're bombarded with in school and everywhere else. He says that the key to winning over and uniting the working class is actually to present an argument where the working class will see the potential for their own liberation, that things will actually get better in a new and independent Ireland. And I think that argument still holds very much true today. It's not always an easy argument to make, but it's a very, very important argument. So so while sectarian tensions are growing in places like Belfast, in Dublin there's the greatest struggle that the Irish working class has probably waged up until today, and that's the Great Dublin Lockout, where you've got a rising trade union movement, the Transport Workers Union, that is in many ways an Irish version of the Wobblies, organising the unskilled, low-wage workers. They're for a workers' republic. They are for, which means they're for socialism, and they're also for Irish independence. So it's a very, very political union, even though it's organising on very bread and butter type issues, higher wages, the right to union recognition. For the employer class in Ireland, the type of militancy that the transport workers union their style of agitation, it was completely unacceptable. So the Irish employers were determined to smash the growth of this new union, because it was actually effective. They wanted what they called acceptable British trade unionism, where there'd be nice, polite negotiations with men in suits, and they didn't want the rabble-rousing solidarity, sympathy strike model, strike in order to make gains approach of the transport workers. So this led to a big confrontation when employers united in Dublin, with the support of the state and the police and the British Army, to lock out the Dublin working class and essentially starve the working class into giving up support for this radical union. And the struggle lasts months, and there's great heroism by the Dublin working class. There's tremendous solidarity from British workers who send supplies across to feed the workers, essentially, and help them to sustain themselves. There's also strikes across Britain by workers in solidarity, who see in what's happening in Ireland the same things in their own city. So Connolly's view on this struggle is not that it's a simple contract labour battle. He sees it as the common class war in Ireland, because the assumption is that there's going to be a new Home Rule Ireland, and that the British control of Ireland will be weakened, and that this struggle was a precursor to the type of struggle that was going to take place. So who was going to rule the new Ireland? Was it going to be green nationalist employers, or was it going to be the working class? From the point of view of the employers, they were not going to let the mob rule Ireland. So this is why crushing the radical union and everything it represented was so important. So, you know, Connolly was able to put into practice a lot of the ideas that he had learned in the United States, and it was very much that vision of a risen working class that we see in the Dublin lockout. The Dublin workers are brutalised, there's workers killed by scabs, and it's in this struggle as well that the Connolly and Larkin established what was then called a Labour Army, which was essentially a group of armed workers who protected strikers or locked out workers when they were having demonstrations, and protected them from scabs and the police. And that would go on to become the Irish Citizen Army, which played a big role in the 1916 rising. So, you know, out of the crucible of struggle was born the Labour Army, and to this day the Dublin lockout remains a kind of pinnacle moment in the Irish working class history. And it's really where trade union leaders are measured against, or the willingness to struggle of any union is measured against as well. And it gives people an idea of the courage and heroism that working class people are willing to unleash when they get the opportunity. The next big political battle that Connolly has to confront, and there's really two more, one is partition and the other is the Great War. So Home Rule, there's a big fight over Home Rule, because obviously the British rulers are not really that willing to give up Ireland. They want to hold on to it. And there's also a significant unionist presence in Ireland. There's basically an agreement to partition Ireland and divide it. And Connolly is against this, as are many other people. They see it as a betrayal of the struggle for Irish independence. And Connolly's argument is different from the arguments that nationalists and republicans put forward. His argument was that Labour should do everything in its power to oppose a partition, up to death if necessary. And the reason why Connolly was so against partition was because he believed that the revolution-making working class would be weakened by partition. Meaning, if your theory for social change in Irish independence and socialism is based on the unity of the working class across Ireland, dividing that working class will weaken it and will put back the struggle for socialism. So this was Connolly's perspective for why partition needed to be opposed aggressively. And he was absolutely right. It did weaken the working class struggle in Ireland in later years. So that was a very, very important argument and insight that Connolly put forward. So this was a crisis for the working class movement. It was a crisis for the socialist movement. It divided the socialist movement because not everybody who said that they were a socialist in Ireland was for independence from Britain. Some people claimed that they were internationalists, and that's why we should have nothing to do with self-determination movements while they're ruled by the British Empire, of course. It's very illogical, and we still hear arguments like that sometimes today. And the next crisis then that confronted Connolly, but not just Connolly, but really the international socialist movement, was the outbreak of the Great War in 1914. And I think they understand why Connolly agitated so aggressively for a rising in Ireland. You have to look at it in the context of the outbreak of the war, because most often the Irish rising is just looked at as an Irish rising that was just about Ireland, and this was not Connolly's perspective at all. When the Great War broke out, Connolly made the case for this is an opportunity now for revolution across Europe. He wrote a great article called Continental Revolution, where he says, this imperialist war is going to destroy civilization as we know it. Its barbarism is going to be murderous and kill millions of people, and that the socialist movement should do everything in its power to stop the war from happening. And he argued for, he basically said, we've passed all these resolutions as an international socialist movement. We should organise general strikes. We should blow up bridges. We should refuse to go to war, and we should actually launch a civil war. And he says the consequences of doing that will be less in terms of damage that the actual war itself will produce. So this is what his argument was, and he was despondent, like other socialists were around the world, that the big socialist parties across Europe, his comrades, were going to send socialist soldiers to the trenches to kill other socialist soldiers. And obviously this was a tragic moment for the international socialist movement, that it compromised itself into support for the Great Slaughter. Rather than falling into passivity, Connolly developed an argument about a way out, and his argument was pretty simple. He said that a rising in Ireland could, because of Ireland's relationship to Britain, because Britain at the time was still the major imperial power in the world, a successful rising in Ireland could set off the chain of rebellion right across Europe and destroy imperialism, but also destroy the irrational economic system that gave birth to it. So that's his perspective that he develops in 1914, which is not a narrow nationalist perspective for to be a martyr for Ireland. It's about seeing the Great War as the opportunity to bring around really a global revolution, and putting the activity of the working class and other people who were opposed to the war, the self-activity in Ireland, is the crucial factor, which I think is very, very important. So that was his organising perspective then for the next couple of years, and he agitated in the labour movement. So the Dublin labour movement, the transport workers, he organised with, again, feminists, the advanced nationalists, republicans, to agitate against the British, the support for Britain in Ireland, because there was an attempt to conscript Irish soldiers, and they did all this very, very successfully. He also agitated for the rising for those reasons. Now again, the rising's also often presented as this event where it was certain death, and that the point was to have people killed so that they could be martyrs for future generations. That wasn't Connolly's perspective. Connolly believed that the rising in Ireland could actually win He thought that something like 15 to 20,000 people would participate. They were, you know, they managed to smuggle guns from Germany and ammunition. And he believed in 1916 that Ireland and Europe was becoming ripe for revolution, and that what was needed was a spark to set off the chain of events that could lead to ending the war. So that's the perspective, I think, that Connolly developed about the 1916 rising, which is, again, not what people are educated or taught about in Ireland, that it was a very universal way of thinking about it. And the rising, even though the rising is defeated, it does play a role in helping to spark revolution across Europe, because the message was that Irish subjects under the boot of the British Empire have risen up against this great power, have humiliated the British Empire. They want to conscript Irish soldiers, and instead there's a revolution in Ireland attempting to overthrow British rule. And I think that does inspire, help to inspire people around the world. And Connolly's right. I mean, 1917, we've got the outbreak of the Russian Revolution, 1918, the German Revolution, and then right across Europe. And in 1918, the vision that Connolly had kind of theorised about came into reality. The War of Independence is often talked about as a military war of the IRA against British rule, and it very much was. But it was much more than that. There was mass strikes starting in 1918 against conscription. There was land occupations by rural workers. There was workers set up Soviets, some hundred of them across Ireland. They were basically occupying their workplace and saying, "This is now a Soviet," with that model. And so there was an all-out social and military rising against the British Empire, and it wasn't just about removing the empire, it was the working class asserting its demands, and so they were opposing employers' dictates, but they were also opposing the dictates of the empire, and that's what the Irish Revolution looked like from 1918 to 1921. And so there was a vicious British counteroffensive to smash this movement, to put uppity women back in their place, and obviously destroy the new vision of a new Ireland that people were fighting for. Connolly obviously wasn't around, and that was a great tragedy, because he'd been executed by the British for his role in the 1916 rising. So there wasn't a big enough organisation of people who were inspired or trained in the ideas that Connolly had developed during the rising, or during the preceding 20 years. So this is the revolutionary history of Ireland that has been systematically buried, and I think Connolly is the theorist of it, and that's why I think he continues to I think unearthing this history is very, 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 very important. So why is Connolly relevant today? Well, I think that story of Connolly is relevant because that leads people to different conclusions about Irish history and so on. So I would make a number of arguments about why Connolly is relevant. First of all, another aspect of Connolly that's being totally submerged is his support for women's emancipation. And again, if you think about how conservative the new Irish state was, they had to bury Connolly's support. Connolly wrote a book called The Reconquest of Ireland, and there's a chapter dedicated to the question of women. And in that, he talks about how women have been oppressed in Ireland throughout the history. He describes women as the slave of the slave, working class women as the slave of working class wage earners. But Connolly had actually worked with, he'd been a supporter of the suffragette movement, the right for women to get the vote, the right for women to have trade union representation. And he argues in this that the entire working class movement should back the rebellious working class women's struggle for their own emancipation, and that struggle can actually set ablaze the wider struggle of everybody who wants to achieve independence and liberation. So he wrote, and I think this is a great quote, to think about the choice struggle in Ireland or the equal marriage struggle in Ireland, but anybody who is oppressed, he wrote, in this chapter, he writes, none so fitted to break the chains as they who wear them, none so well equipped to decide what is a fetter. And I think that the idea that the oppressed are going to decide themselves what a fetter is, and they have that vision of oppressed people themselves leading the fight for their own emancipation, I think is absolutely crucial. And as we see in Ireland now, there are rising struggles for social emancipation. In the South, we've won equal marriage. Women have just won the right to choose in the South now. There's rebellious, so the vision of a rebellious, risen people, I think, is very, very, very crucial. So that I think, is important, and that's something they unearthed because it was buried. I think the type of trade unionism that Connolly was for, Connolly, again, is praised by trade union leaders in Ireland. He's celebrated, and he is as some people might know, there's a great statue here in Chicago put up by the Irish American Labour Federation. Now, the type of trade unionism that Connolly was for is the type of trade unionism that the official leaders of the trade union movement try to smash day in, day out, that is rank and file led, that sees a strike as a weapon for the working class to use as often as possible, that sees activity by workers as the key to widening people's horizons and giving people organisation and self-confidence that people can bring about change by themselves from below. And the idea that there's a forward movement to the struggle and that there's an end goal, which is smashing capitalism and destroying imperialism. And so that's the type of trade unionism that's political and militant that Connolly was all about and represented. And we desperately need that right now. And obviously, we see that in the teachers' revolt here in the US. I think Connolly's agitation against imperialism is going to become increasingly important when we think about the type of tensions that are being pushed forward now between, it's not just Donald Trump, it's about the United States, it's about China, it's about the European Union. The big powers are entering into bigger battles with each other over trade, obviously in tariffs, but we know behind all that lies military power and so on, and the collateral damage will be the rest of the world. And so I think that opposition to imperialism and seeing imperialism very much connected and flowing from capitalism is very, very important. And to destroy imperialism, we have to destroy capitalism as well. I think another aspect of Connolly that's going to become increasingly important is the message Connolly had for socialists who are standing in elections and for political parties that do well. Because I think we're not just seeing the rise of the right, we're seeing the growth of more radical parties and more socialists getting elected. And Connolly believed that socialists should participate in elections. But he argued that the role of a socialist in a parliament or in the Dáil or wherever you get elected is to be a disturber of the political peace, meaning you get elected to be a rebel. You don't get elected to manage capitalism. You get elected to use your platform to do everything you can to amplify working class struggles and to call for revolt. And obviously you do that strategically as possible, but that's the key thing. And he was against the idea that we should manage capitalism for them, because this will undermine and destroy the socialist movement. So it was a very kind of lean in, if you want to call it that, and take whatever opportunity arises where you can project your arguments and push forward struggles, take it. But you don't need to compromise your politics and your goals in order to do that. So the other argument I think that Connolly is crucial for is in Ireland, the issue of partition. It still is the most divisive issue, especially in the north. We'll have partition for almost 100 years. So the partition in many ways has been normalised. The idea that there's two states and people have different, they look in different directions politically. But one thing that's happened because of Brexit is that the issue of partition has arisen again. This was an indirect consequence, obviously, as the issue of Scottish independence has come back into the light, as Neil and others were talking about today. So there is a possibility there will be a border poll. The Good Friday Agreement that was established to end the Troubles in the 1990s has many, many, many problems. It does have a mechanism for holding a border poll, which would basically be a referendum on partition, where people would get the right to vote on whether or not to end partition, and that means leaving the United Kingdom and joining with the Republic. Now, this will be very, very divisive. It's not inevitable that it would win. And given the kind of sectarian violent history that's existed in the north, it's not something we can have a very light approach to, because there are people who will, you know, do everything they can to stop partition from being ended. So again, Connolly's idea of seeking to unite the working class around issues that they are will advance their lives and make their lives better is key. So campaigning for socialists in the north, socialist campaigning in the north right now, it's crucial we try to bring working class Protestants together. It's actually become more important as we look at the British government destroying the National Health Service, destroying public services, and you know, keeping everybody at poverty wages. So that that vision of Connolly of uniting Protestant Catholic workers and making a class and socialist argument for the need to get rid of partition is crucial. We do have two states in Ireland, two rotten states. The southern state, as I was saying, has been dominated by Irish nationalists who are pro-neoliberal, who see Ireland's future as you know, part of and a promoter of the European Union vision of the neoliberal vision, and also very much integrated into US capitalism. Ireland's a tax haven in the south. This is where the wealth of Ireland's rulers comes from. The vast majority of people don't benefit from this. And we do see, we have seen the Great Water Charges movement, the Equal Marriage campaign. We've seen the women's liberation fight over the question of choice. So things are changing in Ireland. There's a, you know, there's a potential for a more progressive Ireland in the north. We have, you know, many of the changes that we've seen in the south, people want those in the north as well. But we have a veto from the DUP, and we also have the, you know, the DUP is now propping up the Tory government. So I think it's very important now that we develop an all-Ireland vision for what a new Ireland could look like. And I think what Connolly argued about a socialist vision, a workers' republic, as he called it, or a socialist workers' republic, I think that this is going to become an increasingly important argument as the debate around partition, being for it or against it, or Ireland's role in the European Union, as these questions come to the fore. And I think we can't say, let's just focus on the issue of ending partition and we'll sort out all the other issues, because those issues, the drive for the right to choose in the north, the drive for equal marriage in the north, are all the kind of crucial questions that can actually lay the basis for creating a risen people, north and south, that can see their struggles as being one struggle for a different kind of, a different Ireland, a socialist Ireland, and that's not an Ireland cut off from the rest of the world. Because one thing that's clear about Connolly, he wanted to see, and he did see it, the solidarity of workers in Britain. So I think we have to have a vision of, you know, those struggles interacting with each other, but also, you know, across Europe and across the world. Connolly was a universalist. He had a very inspiring vision of working class people establishing a new civilization that would be very different from the one that we currently have. And he was for getting rid of kings, kaisers, queens, and, you know, capitalists. And I think that the best way to honour Connolly today and his 150th anniversary is fight for that vision and do everything we can to bring it about.
The preceding program was a production of WeAreMany.org, a website dedicated to publishing radical and activist media that promotes a better understanding of today's world while also putting forward a vision for a better future. We Are Many is a project of the Center for Economic Research and Social Change. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out WeAreMany.org.